The Magnificent Seven, they were known as. Kensal Green, Norwood, Abney Park, Brompton, Tower Hamlets, Nunhead, and, most famous of all, Highgate Cemetery. Welcome to the Victorian Valhalla. Oh, it's lucky I don't have a hernia. Through these heavy cast-iron gates have passed the mortal remains of more than 168,000 souls, all on their final journey to the cold ground of the hillside beyond. There they lie at rest in the 51,800 graves which my father, and his father before, dug for them.
I'm singing in the rain, just singing in the rain. What a glorious feeling, I'm happy again.
Oh, hello there. Come on in out of the rain. I'll just turn the Dunset down. I'm doing a spot of hut cleaning today. I've been meaning to clear out the old place for ages. I don't think I'll get much done out there today. This wooden hut has been a home from home to four generations of sextons, including yours truly, and during those 150-odd years, I don't think anyone's ever flicked a duster around in here. Oh, sure. Oh, excuse me. Oh. Four generations of dust mites are fighting back. I've heard some amazing tales sitting on these bentwood chairs. I used to look forward to grey days like these when rain stopped play. My grandfather would sit over here in this, the only comfy chair. Ooh. He'd loosen his gaiters, and with an enamel mug of tea in one hand and a digestive biscuit in the other, he'd keep my father and me enthralled for hours with the stories of the men and women buried here at Highgate. Ooh. Ooh. Oh, I don't think he'd sit here for long these days. What is going on here? Oh, it looks like the wood mice have been having a field day and the stuffing. I'm not surprised. This armchair and a portrait of Queen Victoria up there are the oldest things in here. Arthur Mo, she's got a moustache. Oh, no, she's just a bit dusty. Excuse me, Mum, while I take you down and give you a quick wipe. I don't know, what have we here? There's another picture on the back. Thomas Sayers, 1826 to 1865. Ah, now, that is a good story. When Thomas Sayers died, his funeral was the biggest that Highgate ever witnessed. Literally, thousands of people came to pay their respects. Oh, but I'm jumping the gun. I'll stick a record on to get you in the mood. Yes, sir. Yeah, this is perfect. Then let's see if I can remember it the way my grandfather told it to me.
You are my honey, honeysuckle. I am the bee.
Thomas Sayers was born in the tiny bedroom of a little brick floored, one up and one down cottage in Tichborne Street, Brighton, on the 15th of May, 1826. His father, James, was a 48-year-old itinerant shoemaker, and his mother, Maria, was 44. And relieved that he was the last of their five children. Like many deprived kids then, Tom never went to school, but the beach was on his doorstep, and he learned of life on its shingle shore.
So I'll say to him, I may be a poor fishwife, sir, but there's no way you're gonna fill it.
What?
You did.
I did, Lil. He got back into his carriage and drove off.
With a flea in his ear?
No, it were a sprat, actually.
Oh. Hey, watch it, missus.
Oh, here, you get out from under my skirts, you little bum fiddler. Uh-huh. I'll tell your dough on you, Tom Sayers. To your blooming terror, that one. Here, you seen him box it with the coal merchant's mill?
Do what?
Yeah. He's trained Mr. Rumpole's donkey to box.
I never.
Yeah, it's a sight to see, Lil. He wraps a pair of his mother's old stockings round his little fists and he set to. The donkey, yeah, the donkey rears on his hind legs and Tom dodges in and gives it a couple of jabs. Then he slips under his belly and jumps up on his back, the beast snapping at his legs. Oh, he's a wonder.
Does Mr. Rumpold know Tom's been fiddling with his ass?
Here, Lil, he wouldn't know even if I've been fiddling with his nutty slack at the same time.
It always makes me laugh, that. Young Tom Sayers didn't realise at the time, but that donkey was the start of something big. When he was 13, Tom decided it was time to find a trade. So he set off to London on foot. When he arrived a few days later, he went straight to Camden Town, where his brother-in-law, Robert King, ran a small building company.
Mr. King?
Up here. What is it, foreman?
Young fellow here says he's a relative, sir.
Be right down. Is that Thomas Sayers?
That's what he says, sir.
Good to see you, Tom. You've gone a yard since I last saw thee. What brings you to the smoke? No, don't tell me, unless I'm mistaken. It's a job you're after.
You a mind reader or something, Uncle Bob?
No, but I recognise hunger, me lad. Fred?
Yes, Governor?
Here's eightpence. Take Mr. Sayers here round to the greasy spoon, then give him a plumb bob and trowel and show him the ropes.
Yes, Governor.
And Fred, keep your eye on him. He's a wicked sense of humour.
Well, Tom Sayers took to bricklaying like a navvy to potatoes. His apprenticeship was served working on the New London and North Western stations of King's Cross and St. Pancras, and he became known for his speed and dexterity. As usual, he soon found himself in trouble when a fellow worker, a 6'3" Irish labourer, took exception to some of his jokes.
How do you confuse an Irish builder?
Lean a couple of shovels against the wall and ask him to take his pick.
That's supposed to be funny, Sayers.
You didn't like it, Mick. Well, can you answer me this? What do you get if you cross an Irishman with a pig?
I don't know. What do you get if you cross an Irishman with a pig?
Nothing. There's some things even a pig won't do.
Right, that's it, Sayers. Put up your knuckles.
Where's your sense of humour, mate?
In the right fist, and it's a blinder.
You'll have to be quicker than that, Paddy.
You're right, gonna kill you, Sayers.
Not on my time, you don't, Paddy. Not if you value your job. Foreman?
Yes, Mr. King?
Any man brawling on my site will be dismissed. No money's owing, any man or boy. Is that understood?
Yes, Mr. King.
Now, back to work, men. Tom, I expect better of you. You want to fight me, lad? You do it on your own time.
Thanks, Governor. I intend to.
That very night, Tom, the Irishman and their supporters met on Wandsworth Common. The ground being muddy, Tom took off his boots and fought barefoot, and for the first half hour he took a right old beating. Then the Irishman's boots became so heavy with the mud clinging at his soles, he slowed down, and Tom slipped in under the big man's guard. After 2 hours and 20 minutes, Tom delivered a classic uppercut to the Irishman's chin, and he went down poleaxed. The Irishman's injuries were so grievous that a doctor took one look at him and informed the police. A warrant was immediately issued for Tom's arrest, and he set off hot foot back home to Sussex. He didn't stay long in Brighton. Under the patronage of the Prince of Wales, the town had become the most fashionable resort in England, and there was building work aplenty. But Tom had heard Dame Fate's siren call. He had decided to throw in the trowel and to try his hand as a fighter in the prize ring.
Time, gentlemen, please. Drink up now.
I buy you another, Mr. Fiddler, but I find myself a bit embarrassed.
No matter, Tom. You were saying?
Well, you see, Mr. Fiddler,
I fought a couple of fights, and I've won them fair and square. But I need a sponsor if I'm going to get a decent match. I'm hungry, Mr. Vidler.
Married too, so I hear.
Oh, not fully. We're testing the water, so to speak. Mind you, I'm already in over my head. Sarah's expecting a baby. I really need a good match, Mr. Vidler.
Here, Tom, take this.
Blimey, it's a £5 note. I haven't seen many of these.
We'll soon change that, Tom. I saw you take on the Tipton Slasher the other night, and you were good. Inexperienced, but nothing a good trainer can't sort out. You need a sponsor? You found one.
Mr. Fiddler!
Now listen, Tom. Take that fiver and first thing in the morning go down to the office of Bell's Life News Sheet and see either Frank or Vincent Dowling. Tell them you want to issue a challenge to Dan Collins of Wandsworth. It'll cost a couple of quid for them to print it.
Right.
Then go down to the Cut and look up Peter Crawley.
Peter Crawley? What, the ex-champion of England?
Yeah, Peter's a personal friend of mine. He has a gym down there above a pub. He'll be your trainer from now on, and a better man will be hard to find. He's the human embodiment of honesty and good nature, is Peter.
You're top-notch, Mr. Vidler.
No, Tom. But work hard, my boy, and you soon will be.
Tom didn't have long to wait for Dan Collins' reply, and the fight was arranged for the 22nd of October, 1849, in a venue to be confirmed. Barefist fighting was illegal, you see, so the fight's location was kept hush-hush right up until the last moment, so the boys in blue didn't catch on. Come the 22nd of October, a special mystery tour train set off from London Bridge and chuffed out into the Kent countryside. The special economy fare of 10 shillings a head for first class and 8 bob for second had ensured a large turnout of the fancy. That's what ardent boxing supporters were called. And incidentally, that's where the word fan comes from. The train drew to a halt just outside the little village of Edenbridge, and everyone jumped down and walked a short distance to a nearby wood where a ring had been hastily erected. At midday, precisely, the two boxers came out fighting. The betting was 6-2 on Dan Collins, who was in prime condition, and for the first 9 rounds, there seemed no stopping him. Then Tom found his rhythm and the betting changed. The 10th round bell had just rung when a different sound filled the clearing.
Stand aside there.
Gentlemen, I have here arrest warrants in the name of the Queen against Mr. Thomas Sayers and Mr. Daniel Collins. Let them step forward. You, Sayers? Collins? Gentlemen, I am a sporting man myself, and have no desire to serve these warrants. If you return to your train, I'll forget that I ever clapped eyes on you. I want no trouble here. Mr. Sayers, if it's any good to ye, I know of a fine patch of turf in Red Hill where you won't be disturbed. Private land, 'tis mine. Do you have room aboard or another passenger?
For you, but not your constable, sir. After you.
Tom, well done, man.
I want to finish it, Mr. Vidler. Collins is a hard man, but Red Hill will run scarlet come sundown. To the train!
We'll be right back.
thought it might be clearing up, too. Well, the train arrived at Redhill at 3 o'clock, and the fight started again, 20 minutes later. The boxers set in two with renewed vigour. At 4:15, 50 rounds later, both men had taken a bashing, but there was still no clear winner. At sunset, as the light started to go, the umpire stepped in, stopped the fight, and declared it a draw, splitting the purse equally between Tom and Collins. Sayers' gentlemanly conduct that day had made him a lot of fans, and a whip round the crowd more than doubled his money. He spent his well-earned wisely and married Sarah Henderson 6 weeks before their baby daughter was born. With a wife and new baby to feed, he was soon looking for a rematch with Collins. But his coach, Peter Crawley, had other ideas. He had devised a... Oh, what do you call it?
A new regime.
That's it.
A new regime? How do you mean, Mr. Crawley?
That's enough for today, Tom. Your stamina needs improving. Your right hand's as hard as an auctioneer's hammer, but we have to work on your feet and your overall strength. So before you rush into a rematch with Collins, we're going to make you flit like a butterfly and sting like a bee. Right, Tom?
Flit like a butterfly and sting like a bee. Right, Mr. Crawley.
Starting tomorrow, you'll rise at dawn and take a half-mile run on the beach before breakfast. That should keen your appetite. Breakfast will be mutton chops, or steak on Sundays, with a helping of stale bread and a pint of beer. Then it's a 6-mile jog, return about noon, quick nap, and out for a 4-mile walk. He'll be hungry again after that, so you'll take tea, which will be the same as your breakfast.
Shove a duck. I'll be round as a barrel.
I know what I'm doing, Tom. After tea, a spot of light sport, bowls or cricket to stimulate your grey matter, and then bed. You'll be stronger than Samson when I'm through with you. Where are you going?
To have all my hair cut off. I'm not taking any chances saying goodbye to the missus. She's a right Delilah sometimes. I'll see you at the station.
I've put a board underneath the cushion on Granddad's armchair, so I'm going to make a quick cuppa and finish the story in comfort. Flit like a butterfly and sting like a bee. Eh? It's true. That's exactly the advice which Crawley gave to Tom. Funny, isn't it? Our history has a habit of repeating itself, isn't it? After 3 weeks' regime, Tom was looking fit as a fiddle. Come rematch day, the 29th of April, 1851... he was fighting fit and raring to go.
Read it again, Mr. Crawley.
Another proof that a great fight and a small stake often go together was given on Tuesday last, when Tom Sayers and Dan Collins met to settle the adjourned battle. Sayers is a powerful, hardy-looking fellow and bids fair to prove a clipper. On this occasion, Collins was sadly overmatched in strength and stamina, while in skill, Sayers was his equal. Tom Sayers will prove a tough customer for whoever next has dealings with him in the fistic line. Good enough for you, Tom?
Oh, I'll see.
Tom? Tom, your carriage to London awaits.
All right, oh, Mr. Vidler.
Have a good rest, Tom. It's the championship next. I'll work you harder for that.
Ignore him, Tom. He's a sadist. Give me regards to your wife and new son. Oh, and don't let her wear you out. Oh,
no chance of that.
Tom didn't receive the hero's welcome he expected. He returned to Camden Town to find that Sarah had been having an affair with a local taxi driver and had left him. The money he'd been sending home frittered away. All he knew was how to use his fists. So Tom took to travelling the country, giving boxing exhibitions. By the time of his next fight, the middleweight championship against Nat Langham, on the 18th of October, 1853, he'd found a new manager and trainer. And, for the first and only time in his life, he was beaten. Nat Langham refused him a rematch, and Tom, hurt and angry, insisted that, according to the unwritten rules of the ring, Langham should therefore forfeit the title. A right old storm was brewing. Like this tea. Oh, just right. When Langham asked to see Sayers alone, Tom was all prepared for a rumble. As it happens, things turned out quite unexpected.
Here's to you, Mr. Langham.
And to you, Mr. Sayers. God. You give me a damn good beating, son. I'll never be the same again.
Go on.
No, I mean it. I can't fight you again, Tom. Do you see? My health shot. That's why. Look, I want you to take this.
The championship belt? I can't.
No, take it. It's yours. You're the only man I've met in the ring who could defend the title with the obligation and humour it warrants. You're a champion, Mr. Sayers. It's rightfully yours.
Here's my hand, Mr. Langham. I'm proud to have fought you, sir.
And you.
Langham was a good judge of character. Tom defended his title fiercely, though fairly, and became renowned the length and breadth of these fair isles for his true sportsmanship. In 14 fights, he beat all comers, until the 17th of April 1860, when he met John Camel Heenan, the American middleweight champion, in the fight billed as the Clash of the Titans, the first ever world middleweight championship fight. When the two special trains, laden with 1,200 supporters, dodged police outriders and arrived on the Hampshire-Surrey border at Blackwater, scarcely any art or profession was unrepresented. Even Lord Palmerston, the Prime Minister, had tagged along for the ride. At 7:30 exactly, the umpire called...
Time, gentlemen!
And the two fighters squared up to each other.
I stared at Heenan for a full minute, my arms at my side, studying his face. He stared back. Suddenly, Peter Crawley's words of advice sounded in my head.
Remember, Tom, flip like a butterfly and sting like a bee.
Cautiously, we both begin to move, weaving, ducking and dodging. I strike the first blow, drawing blood. Heenan catches me with a punch to my forehead in return. He's a powerful man. Round six. Heenan lands a punch on my right arm. A numbness runs from my wrist to my elbow. I catch him with a straight left to the face and his cheek opens, blood pouring from the gash.
Don't tickle him, Tom. Take him off to his mother.
Round 15. My right arm useless. Heenan splits my nose. I fall to my knees. The man who licks me will have to kill me first. Round 26. I deliver a left hook to Heenan's eye. It begins to close.
Pull up his other shutter, Tom, and the show will soon be over.
Round 36. Heenan can't see. He flails wildly. I dodge. He grabs my head and rabbit punches my neck again and again. 42nd round. I can't breathe. Heenan's cut my neck over the ropes. It's choking me.
In the 42nd round, the crowd, sensing their hero was in trouble, stormed the ring and the fight was stopped. The referee, who had been knocked for six in the melee, regained consciousness and pronounced it a draw. A week after the fight, Sayers was awarded the enormous sum of £3,000, all of it raised by public subscription, with the proviso that he never fight again. Well, he never did. He invested the money and spent the rest of his days a man of leisure. He quietly faded from public life, though he enjoyed driving his carriage through the city, with his dog, Lion, a gift from Lord Derby, an admirer, sitting at his side. He was only 39 when he died of tuberculosis.
Give ear, you gallant heroes, of high and low degree. Tom Sayers is gone to his last home. No more we shall him see. His time is come, his glass is run, he's gone to that silent bourne where he must lay till judgment day. No more he can return.
If you do ever get the chance to visit Highgate and Tom Sayers' grave, you'll see Lion, his mastiff, there too. Tom had insisted that the hound be the chief mourner at his funeral, and he so impressed the thousands who lined the funeral route with his dignity that a statue of the faithful hound was placed at his master's feet. There they both lie, up the hill, for all eternity. Oh, I'd better press on and get out the Hoover. Some of the dust devils in here will put Beelzebub to shame. Pop by again soon and I'll tell you more about Highgate and yet another extraordinary sexton's tale. Toodlepip.
In the Sexton's Tales, George Cole played the sexton, and appearing in the cast were John Baddeley, Roger May, Dan Strauss, Emlyn Harris, Melanie Hudson, and Jill Graham. The programme was written by Emlyn Harris, produced by Neil Rosser, and was a Rewind IBM production for Radio 2.